This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, Jen.
Hey, Jen. Cam, how are you?
I'm great. You know what today is?
Day one.
Daylight comes and I want to go home. It is the first day of the fourth annual 12 Nightmares Before Christmas. Jen, you want to tell the good people
what that means? Everyone. What it means is every day until Christmas, we will be doing an episode. Some are long, some are short. But what it is we are giving you an episode a day of the 12 Days of Christmas, which first day we have one victim, second day we have two victims, and so on and so forth. So as the days get higher, so does the body count. Morbid, yes, but it was just a nice little thank you for listening to us all year round. We wanted to do something special for you all, and this is our fourth year of doing it, if you can believe it.
It is.
So I know a lot of people enjoy it, and so we're keeping on doing it. And I will tell you that it is getting harder to find things.
I just calculated it in my head, Jen, without a calculator. This means 48 episodes.
Wow.
Surrounding this.
Nightmares Before.
Mm-hmm. After this.
My darling daughter was the one that came up with this when she was 12, too. So that tells you what kind of things she's used to around this house. Grew up with murder stories on the TV.
Comes by it naturally.
She does. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we hope you enjoy it. We will be coming to you every day. We will be dropping an episode. And a lot of the times, these are quickly researched since we have to put out so many at such a short time. So some are going to be longer than others. And they're usually not as detailed as we normally go into. Some are, some aren't. It just depends on what we can find.
We'll put these together so that while you're cooking, baking, cleaning, wrapping, shopping,
trying to stay away from relatives that you don't enjoy.
Yeah, we're keeping you company. That's all. Today is day one.
Day one. It's beginning to look a lot like murder.
Oh, it's terrible. Let's go, Jen.
All right,
ready?
Let's go.
To kick us off, we are traveling to southern Florida, Coconut Creek to be exact, where the Broward County Sheriff's Department have been called out to an abandoned car. It's January 9th, 1990, and just after 1:30 in the morning. Officers arrive to a car and notice all the windows have been shot out. As they get closer, they see something, or someone, slumped over in the back seat. It's a man with duct tape covering his mouth. His body is riddled with bullets. Officers are careful to search the car for some ID, and they find it. The man is 42-year-old Christopher Morris. Let me just say, this is quite the tale.
A humdinger, if you will.
It is a humdinger, for sure. So put on your seatbelt. Here we go. Christopher has a roommate named Marty Rector. Marty and Chris met in Florida as the two men were serving time in prison. It's probably your first sign that you probably don't want to stay friends with them on the outside.
Exactly.
That would be me anyway. Chris was serving time on a drug charge while Marty was in for aggravated assault. The two of them became friends. Well, Chris would say friends, while Marty would say he was just biding his time, trying to do what he needed to do to get out and get by. Move on. The two grew closer, and as they did, Chris came to Marty one day with an evil plan. Chris wanted to hire Marty to take care of a little problem he had. Well, it was actually two problems to be exact. Chris wanted Marty to kill his ex-wife along with her 11-year-old daughter.
A little girl? Put a hit Chris's, on a little girl?
Yep. Chris's stepdaughter.
Jesus Christ.
This is why you don't want to be friends with people you meet in jail. Prison. Chris explained to Marty that the couple, his ex-wife, Sharon, they had a 2-year-old together, and now his ex-wife was refusing to let him see the baby. At first, Marty said, you know, I don't really do this kind of thing, but, you know, let me think it over. Like I said, he's just biding his time to get out of there. A little note here, Chris was giving him extra things, and in prison, I didn't put this in here, but as you laughed, that's what reminded me, would give him extra things. So it was extra chow, extra money for commissary, extra cigarettes, whatever. And so Marty wanted to keep that going. That was the benefit for him. So Chris baited him by saying, you know, she has life insurance, so we can split the life insurance money after the deed was done. Marty pretty much just said, maybe hoping it would buy him some time until he got out of prison, that he would think about it. You know, I'll think about it. And his idea was to keep saying that till he got out and he'd be off the hook. He'd be clear, still get the free stuff from Chris, but be on his way. Chris was not going to let up. And when he was released, 3 months later, Marty was relieved. Marty's still in prison. Chris is out. That is until Marty himself was finished with his sentence. He exits the prison and look who's outside waiting for him. His new bestie, Chris. Chris is waiting for him right there with some party favors, such as beer and crack cocaine.
Oh, those are great party favors.
Just what you want right outside the prison you just got done doing.
Exactly.
Chris got Marty good and high, and they went back home to Chris's parents' house, which was where Chris had been staying since he got out of prison. Now, after all, Chris needs to be kind to the man that will be taking care of his problem. Now, imagine the shock when Marty is introduced to Theron and Layla with the line, hey, this is Marty. He's the one that's going to do that thing for us. Say what? I'm sure Marty is thinking that this was all between he and Chris, not realizing that Chris's parents were in on the murder hit of
what?
The ex and the daughter. Yes.
The parents, too? Like, a bunch of people were in on this? I mean, not to mention one
life
hit,
insurance.
But
the girl,
baby.
The
little,
So if this tells you the kind of people we're talking about here, that should lay out what's to come. It's soon becoming clear that Chris, Theron, and Layla are all in the plan together. Marty is, I would say, quite taken aback and asks them about this. The couple explained that over the years, they have given money to Chris's ex-wife, Sharon, and they need it back. And so, you know, this is how we plan to get it back. The insurance policy. Once she's gone, Chris tells them that he was also going to be inheriting some real estate that she had as well. If you think about all this, they should have seen this. Why would Chris be getting real estate from his ex-wife? That makes no sense, especially if the wife is not wanting him to see or have anything to do with their daughter. She's not going to keep him as the person that would inherit that. But like I said, we're not dealing with a bunch of rocket scientists here. So
Sharpest knives in the drawer?
Far from it.
Uh-huh.
At this point, Marty is thinking, what did I get myself into? This is the Twilight Zone for sure. All of this is taking place. Marty, by the way, is still kind of high from the crack and the beer. So who only knows what's going through his mind? But as if doling out candy, Theron approached Marty on the side and gave him some cash. You know, just because. I think it was like $300. Marty and Chris are continuing to party with a lot of liquor and a lot of crack. At this point, Marty's kind of noticing that Chris doesn't treat his parents very well. Stealing money from them, bossing them around, basically using them for whatever they could give him. The parents are getting tired of this, and finally, they rent an apartment nearby for Chris. The plan is Marty will live with him until he can get on his feet, both of them. But that's going to be a little bit hard to get on your feet, Jen, when your drug use is really... That's your problem. That's why you're not getting on your feet.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2 months of this kind of living, and the Morrises put pressure on Marty to do the deed because they were giving him anything he wanted, a place to live, food, groceries.
He
drugs.
Was pretty much taking them. Yeah, I'll do it later. Yeah.
Exactly.
He now probably didn't want to kill an 11-year-old little girl, maybe.
He didn't want to do, no, I don't, he didn't want to do either. He likes drugs, he likes guns. He's not a killer, and we'll see that in a minute. The four of them, the parents and Chris and Marty, all come up with the plan. And the plan is this. Marty will go visit Sharon with some flowers as if he was a delivery person and this was a gift. You know, he's just simply bringing her a gift in the form of a bouquet of flowers with a gun. Theron drives Marty over to the house, and when Sharon answers, it hits Marty like a brick. I can't do this. I can't kill this lady. Here she is, smiling big, excited she's getting flowers. I can't do this. He is not a killer. Marty gets in the car and tells him, I'm out. I can't do it. I may be a druggie, but I'm not a killer. And I'm not going to be the one that's going to make you guys some money. Sorry, you're going to have to find somebody else. Now this, Jen, is the story Marty Rector told police. Okay, what does this have to do with the murder of Chris Morris? As if that part of the story is not strange enough, it's about to get a little bit more weird and wild. According to Marty, the Morrises arrived to the apartment one evening when Chris was out. They have to tell Marty something, and they're quite upset. It seems Chris was trying to pull a fast one. Chris, you see, had stopped paying the life insurance on his ex-wife several months ago, meaning that there was no life insurance policy. It had lapsed. So Chris was tricking Marty and his parents into just getting rid of his problem. But there's going to be no payout. There's going to be no insurance policy. So Chris was taking money from his parents to pay for the premium. They gave him money to go do that. And yet he didn't do it. He failed to do it. He used it on other things like, oh, you know, drugs and ladies. The parents were devastated. Chris had disappointed them yet again.
Jesus. Now, I get disappointed when my kid doesn't take out the trash like I asked. But yeah.
Now, what would normal folks do, Jen? Realize this was all crazy, and thank goodness they decided not to commit murder for insurance money. But nope, not these three. Theron, Layla, they have a plan. It's a new plan. They ask Marty if he will kill Chris. They ask Marty if he will kill their only son, Christopher Morris. Now, if Marty wasn't freaked out before, he's got to really be freaking out.
These are some top-notch people right here.
Exactly. At this point, if I were Marty, I would be hightailing it out of there because if these people are ready to kill their ex-daughter-in-law and failed, and now they want to take out their son, it's only going to be a matter of time before they'd have Marty be killed next. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Theron and Layla tell Marty they took out an insurance policy on Chris, and they are, in fact, the ones that would receive the money upon his untimely death. They're tired of Chris and how he treats them, and well, they are more than willing to split the money with Marty. That's nice of them.
Very sweet. Generous, kind.
Takes all kinds, Jen. Now, this is where you have to think, wow, people are just not very informed, or they better know and need to understand the fine print, if you will. Mm-hmm. Theron and Layla explained to Marty that the policy pays $70,000. If Chris is killed in a car, the policy doubles.
Uh-huh.
Now, what the couple was confused about was that the policy doubles with an accidental death or dismemberment.
Right.
Meaning if he was killed in, say, a car accident. They didn't get that part, Jen.
No.
They did not get that part.
They just thought that they could put a body in the car, wreck the car, and then, oh, okay, yeah.
Not even wreck the car. He could just be murdered in the car. It didn't matter. They didn't get that. They just need his body simply needed to be discovered in a car. Marty's still not sure what to do. He's struggling with it. And then he finally decided he had had enough of Chris. Marty, I got to tell you about Marty. I found it on an article from Cracked Magazine. And it was, five real life murder plots, too weird even for Hollywood. And that's where I found it. And then I started looking this up. And so then I found a TV show called Double Cross. And Marty is like straight out of central casting for, I don't know. That's all I got to say about Marty. He's just something else. So at this point, Marty is still not sure what to do. I'm sure he is thinking that this can't be real. It's just a surreal thing. He's struggling with it. However, Chris has been getting on his nerves pretty badly lately. A little background about Chris. Chris was not very well liked. He was a know-it-all. He was bossy. He pushed his parents around, so much so that the neighbors would come out and say that nobody liked him. He was just not a nice person, okay? Mm. And so Aunt Marty, you know, is getting to know him better this way. And Chris would always like needle Marty and belittle him and just be mean to him. And you'll see how that comes across later. He reaches the day where he's finally had enough of Chris. He's just tired of him. And Marty tells the Morrises he will do it. He will kill their only son for insurance money. Seems so bizarre to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Theron goes to a pawn shop and buys a .38 revolver. The two of them make a silencer out of some parts that they found around the house. If I'm not mistaken, part of the stuff around the house was like a lawnmower, part of the lawnmower motor or something. I didn't quite understand that, but it's the point that the father is making the gun that's going to kill his son.
Exactly.
So this brings us up to January 8th, 1990, the night of the murder. When Chris got up and was going to go to the store to get cigarettes and beer, Marty followed him and pulled a gun on him. At first, Chris thought Marty was playing and called him out. When Marty cocked the gun, he knew he was no longer joking. This was real. And this is so sad. As Marty forces Chris to the ground, Chris is yelling for his father to come and help him. Isn't that awful? Knowing that he's the one that made this all happen.
Bastard.
Theron came to help, but it was Marty he was going to help. Help Marty kill his own son, Chris. Theron helps Marty to hold him down and then puts a sock into his mouth to keep him quiet. Marty uses duct tape to hold Chris's hands together. The two of them then carry Chris to the car and put him in the back seat of the car. The men then drive Chris to where they had planned their attack. As they arrive, and unbeknownst to them, Chris had managed to break out of his restraints. He attacks Marty from behind and attempts to start strangling him. Marty then gets the gun, pulls it out, and fires four times into Chris. Chris is severely injured, but manages to open the door and crawl out of it. He stands up. He's trying to get away. He's trying to run, but it's more of like a stumble, and then he falls down. All of this in front of his dad. I can't get over that.
And the dad doesn't, he's so wanting the money that he doesn't. Mm-mm. Well, he planned it. I was going to say, doesn't even, you'd think he'd get a conscience somehow and like.
Nope. It's about to get worse. Marty and Theron approach him when he's out there and they say, you got to get back in the car. We're going to take you to the hospital. You know, they were only trying to teach him a lesson. Oh, that's what they tell him. We're only trying to teach you a lesson. Well, desperate, Chris trusts them and he gets in the car. He's going to bleed to death in that field if he does not get to the hospital. After he climbs back in the car, it becomes obvious that they are driving in the opposite direction of the hospital. Chris is bleeding to death and will definitely die without medical care. Marty pulls over onto a desolate road. Chris knows that he will most likely die here, and this is where his personality comes out about him needling Marty. He makes sure to get a last few digs in by calling Marty some choice words. His duct tape's off his mouth, obviously, by this point. You're such a loser. You're just a druggie. You've been a lifelong criminal. Just, you know, those last things. And I'm sure that's only going to make him more mad. Mm-hmm. But Marty pulls the gun, points it at his head, and fires. Marty then gets out of the car, walks around to the passenger side of the back, and fires once more through the glass, hitting Chris. Headlights pull up behind them as this is all taking place. You think it's the police? No, it's not. It's Chris's mom, Layla. She's there to pick them up. Theron and Marty. That's just unbelievable. As the killers get into the car, she wants to know if Chris is dead. Is it done? Is it done? Is he dead? And they tell her yes. She starts clapping and is giddy with relief. That's his mother.
Unbelievable. As a mother, I hate it when my kids get hurt, even if they nick themselves shaving. I absolutely... Well, and to cause the pain? Yeah.
So officers, at this point, they found the dead body. They found Chris in the car, and they have the sad job of traveling back to the Morris home to notify them of the passing of their son. The pair were not altogether shocked, since they've dealt with Chris and his shenanigans for a long time. Chris ran with a rough crowd, and he often ripped off Peter, the drug dealer, to pay Paul, the drug dealer. After prison, Chris tried to get clean and get a job, but he just was unable to do it. He didn't have very much ambition in life, and he was in and out of jail since he was, you know, an older teen. In fact, he had just been, I think he was only out 4 months before all this happened. And the minute he gets out, he showed up to pick up Marty with drugs. He just got right back on the drugs. The Morrises, by people who knew them, were a loving couple who tried to do right by Chris, even letting him stay with them when he had nowhere else to go. Theron was retired from the automotive industry, and his mother, Layla, used to work as a flight attendant, but had left that job long ago to raise a family. The Morrises would tell officers what happened on the evening Chris disappeared. The couple tells investigators that that night, Layla had made a really nice dinner for them all and invited Chris to come over, and Chris brought his roommate, 34-year-old Marty Rector, to dine with them, all of them. The parents say everything was fine, everything's going well, but then Marty and Chris got into an altercation. And it seems that Chris was a mooch. He liked to take stuff and take it without asking. And Marty was getting sick of it, and this had to do with cigarettes and liquor, essentially. They said that Chris stormed out, and that was the last of it. Marty was at the house telling them the story as well. Police set out to talk to some neighbors and find out a little bit more about the Morrises. The couple was well-loved, friendly to all, and would often lend a hand to a neighbor if they needed it. Chris, however, no one liked Chris. They had often seen him being downright belligerent to his dad, being cruel mean and mocking. He was just, Police, they're going to talk to Marty. They're going to find out. They want to get maybe a little bit more into Chris's private life and see if something happened out there drug-related or whatever. Marty confirms that the story that Chris's parents had given police. Marty said that the two of them, Marty and Chris, were starting to argue because Chris was always taking his cigarettes and beer from him. Marty tells officers that Chris stormed out and claimed he was going to the store to get his own cigs and brew. He didn't really say that. I just added that.
You just added that.
Well, he did. Ideally, he was supposed to go to the store to get that. Marty had mentioned that the two of them had left another man by the name of John Wood move in with them recently to save a little money. Okay, John Wood. Who's John Wood? Police need to have a little chat with John, so they bring him in for a sit-down. Maybe he can shed some light on this. For being a new roommate, John sure seems to know a lot about this murder that just happened. Like how many times Chris was shot, and even which body parts took the bullets. He even said that the gun had a silencer on it. Now police knew this, but of course they'd never let this out in the public. So how in the world did this John fella know it? Doesn't end there, Jen. John Wood admits he is the one that killed Chris Morris. Case closed.
That's it. That's just, done.
That's
good
it.
Story.
It's done. Thanks.
Good job.
And then insert record scratch here. John Wood claims that he and Chris got into it over rent money. Wood then said he grabbed a gun and the two of them scuffled over the gun, and then it accidentally went off and landed in Chris's stomach. Scared and not sure what to do, John puts Chris into the front seat of the car and drives him to the area where Chris was found. Many points of John's story doesn't quite add up, including the fact that Chris was never in the front seat. He was always in the back seat. So yeah, they keep digging around, and police learn that John was actually a Vietnam vet, and he was suffering from PTSD, and he was also a severe alcoholic. He had trouble remembering what happens day to day, not to mention when he's drunk, meaning a total blackout. Authorities are back to square one. They decide to rewind and start back at the beginning. Often you miss things, and they do that. So as they're sitting around and they're retracing their first steps, something occurs to one of them, and it's a bit strange. Police, you see, when they arrived to tell Chris's parents the horrible news that Chris was murdered, it was just after 5:30 in the morning. And Theron, Leela, and Marty were all up for the day and fully dressed. The couple was retired, so that wouldn't be altogether odd, but all three of them dressed and ready for the day at 5:30 in the morning and awake? Also important to note here, the police, when they arrived to the gated trailer park community, and the gate agent said, yeah, you're here to see them, go on back. The Morris has never asked, wait, the police are here to see us? Why? What are they here for? That's a little strange, right?
Right.
Like, the police come to your door.
You're going to say, what the hell are you here for? You're right.
Yeah. What happened? What happened?
What's going on?
Why? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Suspicious. Jen, it was almost like
they knew.
Marty, Theron, and Layla knew.
Yeah,
they were waiting for the police. With all this coming to light and them thinking about how this is a little weird, investigators decide they need to bring in the Morrises back in for a little chat. Oh, it doesn't take too long. These folks were, you know, they were getting up in years. Parents finally open up, and it was a shocker. Theron and Layla tell a story that police simply can't believe. They are most positive that they must be confused or in grief. Attempting to see if their story is real, they bring Marty Rector back in. Marty confirmed it all. And at this time, he was even living with the Morrises because, you know, he couldn't stay back at the apartment anymore because Chris wasn't there. Marty explains that they thought that in their head, they thought what they were doing was fair and justified since Chris had put them through so much hell. Payback, if you would. After they murdered Chris, the couple and Marty went back to the trailer to form an alibi and wait for police. Now, of course, as they wait, Marty gets drunk. So when the police show up at 5:30, he's like three sheets to the wind.
Oh, good. That helps. That helps to keep your story straight.
Layla and Theron Morris pled guilty to first-degree murder for the death of their son. Layla receives 12 years, while Theron gets 20 years. He's 76 at the time he was sentenced, so pretty much he will be dying in jail. Marty was convicted of first-degree murder and is sentenced to life in prison. Marty still maintains he never set out to murder Chris. But he did. If you can watch the Double Cross show, I highly recommend it because I just got to tell you, Marty, he kind of looks...
Oh, I looked him up while you were talking. He looks...
You have to hear him talk, though. It's his demeanor.
He looked
demeanor,
as I was like kind of expected him to look, to be quite honest. I was shocked by the way Theron looked because I wasn't expecting him to be, you know, old.
Older, right? Like that old. And, oh my gosh, like I said, you have to listen to him speak. He said that they had it all rehearsed so that when the police came to tell him, and Marty goes, Chris? My friend Chris? Well, yeah, he was a good friend of mine. Or what? Just like over the top. Marty is over the top. There you go. I was trying to find how to say it. Marty is just a little over the top. If you put him in a TV show for a prison inmate, there you go. It's perfect. No offense, Marty, but you know. So there you have it. There is the story about the craziest, what was that Cracked magazine? The 5 murder plots, even too weird for
movies.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I read that and it was just little blurbs of the murder plots.
Right. No,
and
that's,
I can't imagine. He gets hired to kill the ex-wife and instead kill, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I wouldn't believe that. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
I mean, it's like, Theron looks like this kind, gentlemanly,
big old glasses.
Old man.
You know, he probably tinkers with his
out
car
the
outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And that is day one.
Woo-hoo!
For you, Jin Jin.
Day one is done. Well, thanks, Camille. Thanks for doing our day one for us. I've got day two tomorrow.
Like I said, we
always release it at 4 p.m. on Central
Standard Time.
Exactly. So be on the lookout for day two.
Day two. Until next time, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Happy holidays.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Once she's gone, Chris also told them that he was going to inherit some real estate that she had. And all of this would end up theirs after she is gone.
It's now, theirs.
I know, but now I'm concentrating on it because I said it wrong. Theirs.
Theirs.
Theirs. Theirs. I say theirs. It's, theirs. Theirs.
No, you, it's theirs. You say theirs. It's theirs. Your Missouri accent makes you say theirs. But it's theirs.
Like it's over there.
It's over there.
I like it over there.
Over there.
She got the, yeah. What is it? The rock bottom jeans with the,
with the fur. Yeah.
Boots with the fur.
Sorry. I'm just going to take that word out then.